Thank you, Tanya. Got it. Okay, I got the message saying it's recording. So everybody smile and look your best. You're on candid camera. So it's my pleasure to introduce Rebecca Fetter. Rebecca is the founder of Princeton HR Insights, and she's going to be providing us with some insights today on the assessment. As Rebecca and I were talking, it's actually been about 2 years in the making to have Rebecca present to us. So, you know, I guess patience is a virtue. And so it's a pleasure to have her here. And just to do a quick little setup as we were kind of thinking about, you know, as the community engagement and learning group, as we're, you know, looking for presenters, topics, sometimes we do directly topics directly related to org design. And then sometimes we go kind of on the fringes of org design, org development space. And I think what really triggered my interest in this is a lot of times when you're going through the org design process, you have your structure done, it's the placement process comes into play. And if you're like me, you typically are working with an HR business partner and or some talent management professional kind of really guiding the organization through that. And it's also helpful to kind of have a little bit of knowledge to scratch that surface so you can kind of, you know, you're not the experts in that assessment, talent placement, but it's nice to kind of have a network of people and some knowledge to help guide the client, you know, as they're transitioning from, you know, designing the structure, the jobs, the roles to, okay, what is the process for assessing and then placing people to make your design most effective. So Rebecca is here to share her insights and wisdom in that space. So I'll turn it over to her.
Eddie, thank you very much. Rebecca. Thank you for the kind introduction. Hello, everyone. It is great to be here with a two-year lead up. I hope it was well worth the wait. I had just moved to New York at the start of COVID when I was first put in touch with ODF. I have since moved twice within New York and back to New Jersey. So that's been a large part of the delay of getting to this point, but it's fantastic to be here. As Eddie mentioned, I have a background in HR across HR business partnership, talent management. I've done some, I would say, low level org design work in the sense that I know when to call in the experts. So I have as good an org design background as your kind of, you know, average HR business partner would have. I've done small reorgs, business units, but when it gets to a certain level of complexity, when it gets to a certain size, I'm well aware of when to bring in the experts. It's with that background that Eddie and I started talking about, you know, there's a piece in org design where you know where you want to go and you need to make sure that you've got the talent before maybe finalizing your design. Obviously, you never want to design around talent, but making sure that it's a consideration in the process. And so that led us today to talk about one way to take a look at talent can be through assessments and what the assessment, what your environment needs and how this assessment shows up compared to what your environment needs to bring in a bit of an objective lens. So that is what I am hoping you are able to walk away with today, either a sense that you want to develop these skills more deeply or a sense of when it may be worth calling in, you know, business partners, talent management, other people you meet with at this point in the process. So goal, understand how leadership assessments can help ensure organizational design is successful. Context, I think we've talked a bit about, but after the work and structure have been designed, placing talent becomes a critical step in the overall org design process. Leadership assessments can help organizations select the right candidates and also support their integration. So sometimes you may pick a candidate because they're the right fit, but they've still got a couple gaps from what you really pictured that role having, and you can be purposeful about how you spend their first 30, 60, 90 days, making sure that they get the knowledge, connections, context they need to be successful in that role that obviously helps the org design overall be successful. Today's session, we're going to provide an overview of the different types of assessments. It's not meant to be an exhaustive list. It's meant to give you some examples of some popular assessments and differences between a few. We're going to use Hogan as the tool to help bring this concept to life. Not that Hogan is the only tool out there. It's the one that I know the best. It's one that is very common in these types of projects. It's used at about 75% of the Fortune 500. So we're using Hogan as a good example of this process. But again, we'll start with what other tools are out there. So assessments. Assessment is a valid and reliable set of data that helps you understand a person better. My terms, I like to say that there's two levels of assessments, tier one, tier two. Tier one assessments will be your popular four box assessments. And so they take a body of research, they divide it into quadrants. If I sit in one quadrant and Eddie sits in a different quadrant, and we understand the differences in the way that we think and our style of, and how we hear and our style of communicating, we may understand where the other person's coming from better and be able to adjust accordingly. And so these, again, there's some good ones on the market. You've got DISC, you've got Myers-Briggs, you've got Insights, Predictive Index, and probably about 10,000 others, but these are fairly popular ones. Then you've got what I call tier two assessments. These are more nuanced. They may cut the data 20, 30, 40 different ways. You're having deeper discussions around risk-taking and decision-making and social styles, learning approach, et cetera, et cetera. And I would recommend these kind of tier two assessments when making talent selection decisions because they give you a lot more information to be able to compare to the market or compare to the role. I'm sorry. Some popular assessments out in the market that do that are Berkman, Caliper, and as I mentioned, Hogan, which we'll go deep on today. Let me pause there and see if there's any questions or any other assessments you've used that have worked well. Any comments from the group?
Hi, Rebecca. I'm sorry, I don't have my camera on as it's crazy around me. I don't know if there are other type of assessments that you are going to show. There are two that come to mind. And I work in Europe and I understood in certain countries you actually had to be a licensed psychologist to use them. And those are OPQ and CPI. I don't know if you are going to talk about those as well or...
OPQ is very popular in Europe. So okay. The point of today was not to do a deep dive on different type of assessments as much as just kind of set the framework for the exercise of how to use assessments in the org design process. So I wasn't going to kind of go deep on really any of these other than Hogan is to use it as an example to prove a concept. But feel free to tell us kind of what you liked about those assessments.
Sure. No problem. Okay. Clear. Thank you.
Yeah, do you want to share, you know, if you've used them, what you've liked about working with them?
I've had the chance to ask for those from suppliers as they were particularly popular or recommended in different countries in Europe. And it seemed that they would give you kind of a deep assessment regardless of the level of the person. So it wasn't looking for particularly leadership traits. It was more of an overall assessment of what were the, let's say, strengths and weak points of that person at work. So this is very high level. It's been a while since I used them and I needed to refresh, but that's a high level really what I recall.
Great, thank you for sharing. And I see in chat, we've got a couple others, the Colby A, the Harrison. Some of you guys are certified in many of these, the Berkman Hogan DISC. So what I'd say is, let's make sure we make time at the end to talk about whether you use these assessments in ways other than what I describe here so we can all learn from each other how you guys are applying these. But let me walk you through how I've seen this work be done. So again, double clicking on Hogan as an example to take us through this process. Just wanted to give a brief description of what Hogan is for anyone not familiar with the tool. So it's about 30 scales across three different reports. The first report takes a look at a leader's motivations and the environment they're likely to create for others. So what do they value? What motivates them? And what are they likely to put their own energy into creating around them? The second report takes a look at day-to-day leadership. So on average, how will people perceive working with this leader day in and day out? It's obviously not a 360, but it's considered a reputational report. If we drop a leader or employee of any kind into one of 100 different companies, on average, what will their colleagues' perception be of working with them day in and day out? The last report we're not gonna talk through all of these today. I'm gonna use the first one as an example, but the last report that Hogan includes is a look at leaders when they're under stress and pressure. How are they at risk of potentially derailing when they're at their worst? What might that look like? So again, to kind of apply this back to org design, if you have a role where the leader needs to be out in front and motivating the troops and connected, but under stress and pressure, they pull back and they stop engaging with people. Is that something that you can live with? Is it not? If you can live with it, how do you coach them as they integrate into the role? But taking a look at what the environment and the role needs, how this leader may show up in terms of day-to-day, values day-to-day and tendencies under stress, and making an educated decision about selection, and then an educated plan for how to support the person that you select in the role. Does that make sense to folks?
Yeah, Rebecca, and I'll just iterate. This is when you said that to me, what's it like? What would the person be like in the operational setting? That's really what triggered for me is like, oh, this would be really great information to have. And again, I'm not an expert in and have more of the limited experience in the four box assessments, but this just from an org design perspective and how it would actually operate to me was very intriguing.
Yeah, thank you for that ad. Good. So I'm gonna kind of bring this concept to life by walking you guys through the definitions of the scales on the first Hogan report. My ask of you is kind of take notes where you think it's relevant. We're gonna do a quick breakout exercise after we go through the scales for you guys to take a look at the case study that was posted ahead of time and put in chat to say which of these scales most matter. And does the role require something that's high or low? So we're gonna practice that in a minute. The one other thing I wanted to add, which I should have said in my intro, is I've been doing Hogan for about 12 years. When I was at Bristol Myers Squibb, when I was at Tyco, since I've launched my own company, I now also get hired by Hogan to do their debriefs, do their certification program, do projects. So I like to say, I know the tool well. You guys will know your clients and the environment and the talent well, and then together you have a holistic conversation. It's never about the tool is a decision-making instrument. The tool is an inform into a broader discussion. And so even as we go through this case study in a minute, some folks may have different interpretations of a couple of things. We'll talk through that, but that's the point of life is a little bit gray. This data can help make some cleaner discussions or know where to focus. But in my opinion, these tools should never be decision-making tools. They should be tools that help synthesize a conversation down to the elements that really matter. Okay. So again, as I go through these scales, either look at the case study as we go or take notes that when we put you into breakouts in a few minutes, you're able to kind of highlight what you think is most relevant. Okay, so with Hogan's motives and values inventory, they consider 65 and above to be high. These are things that Hogan would predict a leader will find so important that they will put their own time and energy into trying to create that space or that aspect of culture if it doesn't already exist. Scores that are in the middle, 35 to 64, a leader may appreciate if those elements are there, but they probably won't spend their own time and energy trying to create it if it's not. And then low scores, 34 and below, are scores that a leader may be indifferent to. It's just something that's not important to them, but it could be a main driver for the people around them that they're trying to work with or influence. So it's good to be aware of them. So for our purposes, we're going to talk about the highs, we're going to talk about the lows. We're going to compare it to the case study to see which of these scales are relevant. Not all of them will be. And of the ones that are relevant, does the case study seem to have a need for high or seem to have a need for low? But it's not better or worse to be one or the other. All right. So recognition. High recognition is someone who will want to have visibility. They'll generally be comfortable in high profile roles. They may get demotivated faster than other people if you put them in behind the scenes roles. They generally appreciate and like public praise and being in the spotlight, and they will often turn around and provide that to other people, provide visibility, provide public praise. Folks that are lower on recognition tend to have a more modest profile. They don't necessarily want to be in the spotlight or the highly visible roles. In fact, if you kind of put a lot of attention on them, it may be a demotivator. Folks there are considered modest, mature in some ways, but they may not share visibility and public praise as much as other people higher on the scale need to hear. Does that make sense, the difference between the highs and the lows? Go through a couple more and pause and make sure folks are tracking.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, I love your head nod, Eddie. Thank you. High power is not power hungry. High power is someone who wants ultimate accountability, responsibility. They like to give direction, make decisions, be in charge of things, but they're also willing to be in the hot seat when things aren't going well. When there's politics, when the results aren't where they need to be. So they want to have ultimate accountability and responsibility and everything that it means to have that. Folks who are lower on power generally want to come to work, do a good job, put their head down, do a good job, but may not want to deal with all those headaches over there that somebody else has to deal with, especially when things are going badly. Hedonism, altruistic, and affiliation are three scales that are tied to social dimensions. Hedonism is a little bit of an odd word. People have different connotations of what this means, but from Hogan terms, it's work hard, play hard. So folks who are high hedonism will generally want to have fun at work. If I'm gonna work 8, 10, 15 hours a day, I might as well enjoy what I'm doing or else it may not be worth it. Folks who are lower on hedonism are more task focused. They don't need a lot of social interruptions. They're there to get a job done. I'll often talk to leaders. If you have a high hedonism team and there's a high volume of work or it's the type of work that drains energy, make sure you're taking time out for people to connect. Go do a team lunch in the middle of the day, do a Zoom trivia game, whatever it is, because if people come together and connect, you'll get that discretionary effort for them to go back and tackle the work. If you have a low hedonism team, do not suggest they take an hour and a half out of their middle of their day for a team lunch. They're just going to be annoyed at you when they have all this work to get done. So not a right or wrong, but understanding what the environment needs and what type of leader might be ideal. Altruistic is about helping people. On the high side, it's a focus on good customer service, mentoring and developing, can be volunteer work. On the low side of altruistic, it's more a culture of self-reliance and accountability, teach a person to fish, but then have them own that themselves. And so you have the difference between kind of that customer service helping others versus this helping others by teaching self-reliance. Last one before I pause and see if there's any reactions. High affiliation is someone who is proud to have a part of their identity be tied to the communities with which they operate, have shared goals, networking opportunities, low affiliation, someone who's more independent minded and may prefer to work alone. The analogy I like to use on this scale is if you see a car that has a bunch of bumper stickers, those bumper stickers talk about, you know, the branch of the services that somebody served in. They talk about the university somebody graduated from, the political party they vote for, the professional football or soccer team they cheer for. These are all examples of someone who's proud to be a part of those communities. In general, you wouldn't see kind of bumper stickers like that on someone who had low affiliations car. I will often talk to managers about if you have a high affiliation team, buy them all the company swag you can get your hands on. They will use it, wear it proudly. If you have a low affiliation team, save that money in your budget. They're just going to wear the sweatshirt when they're cold or they think it looks good on them. They're just going to use the coffee mug when they need a hot beverage. So let me pause there about halfway through. Is this resonating for folks? Give me a quick thumbs up.
Rebecca, actually, I had a question. Where, from the research with Hogan, where did these categories come from?
Yes, so Hogan was founded about 35 years ago. And they did, Hogan for the most part is actually a company of PhD IOPsych Research Center. Their consulting is largely done outside of the organization. They have a small consulting practice, but they can talk about validity and reliability different than I can. I'm a practitioner. But what they did is they took, they did interviews and they did surveys about culture and had people, you know, kind of check various options. And they went through an iterative process for a number of years and have, you know, kind of refined it along the way to make sure that they've got scales that cover the largest span of culture, according to their definitions, and are distinct and separate from each other. So for example, hedonism, altruistic, and affiliation are all social scales, but they're trying to get at different things in a social profile. Does that help answer the question?
Yeah, I guess that's what was striking me is the difference, you know, because I've done Myers-Briggs predominantly, and I'm familiar with this, but I'm like, oh, this is really different. This is more about the culture. And so that's, yeah, just a different way of viewing an assessment for me.
Yeah, it was good. And that's why I wanted to call out the difference between four box assessments and these kind of more granular assessments, like the tier two assessments I mentioned. Because when you're doing selection, it's not that DISC or Myers-Briggs are better or worse. It's really about, they're all valid and reliable. Quite honestly, they're all based on a similar body of research in many cases. It's really about having the right tool for the job. Sometimes Hogan is overkill. It's too much information for the problem you're trying to solve. But sometimes a DISC and a Myers-Briggs isn't enough information. And so when you're trying to match talent to roles, you know, leadership roles, usually knowing which of four quadrants or their highest two of four quadrants doesn't necessarily give you enough information to make a choice between qualified candidates. And something like this can help add layers to the discussion. Again, there's times when you're talking about emerging leader training and teaching people that different social styles exist out there where Hogan's overkill. So it's, again, right tool for the job.
That's helpful. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks for the question. Any other question on the first five scales before I go through the back half of this? And I'm not trying to make you guys Hogan experts as much as I'd like to get to a level of detail to demonstrate the value kind of when you're live in this work. I'm just scanning a couple of comments to make sure I didn't miss anything. Yeah, good comments. Thank you. Okay, so for the next set of scales, tradition and security. High tradition is generally around respect for a hierarchy, having known social norms, can be socially conservative. What a kind of a classic example of a high tradition organization may be the military. If I know your rank and you know my rank, we know exactly how we should behave with each other. Who stands up and salutes, who doesn't. It's kind of it's more known, it's more structured. That's an extreme example, of course. Low tradition tends to be less of a focus there. So think about a California.com where everybody has the title of manager. Wider variety of social styles may be accepted. I show up with purple hair, you bring your dog to lunch, you know, it's a different type of culture. And again, there's a time and place for both. Security, high security is usually around someone who's going to look for stable, predictable, reliable. They'll work to mitigate risk, mitigate ambiguity. Low security is more of a risk taker. So when you think about a role, how much risk is going to be involved in is needed in this role, or are they there to, you know, protect the base and make sure that there's not risk introduced? So again, time and place. Commerce is an interesting one. It's clearly about money. So on the high side, it can be about an awareness of the company's financial results, the budget you've been given and the allocation of your spend against that budget, the paycheck you get, the lifestyle that it affords you. On the high side of commerce, it can also be people that can get comfortable with the tough business decisions needed to drive the financials. Lower commerce, it's going to be people who are focused on things other than the financial, people over profits, that type of thing. Aesthetics and science. So high aesthetics is someone who's going to be focused on the look, feel, quality, branding of things. Lower aesthetics is going to be more practical, functional, pragmatic. Is it working? Great. Let's move on to the next process and get it working versus sticking around and kind of the look and feel. Science on the high side is data-driven decision-making, objectivity, rational thought. On the low side of science is more people, intuition, past experience. The analogy I like to do here is if you have a high science realtor and you have a low science realtor, and they're both advising you on how to list your house to sell. The high science realtor may say, the market's been going up for the last 90 days. If you want to sell at the top of the market, let's wait another 30 days and see where we are. The low science realtor may say to you, I've been doing this for 25 years. I have a sense that the market is softening. I think if you want to go out at the top of the market, you should list sooner than later. They both have their logic, but they're giving you different advice. What happens a lot of times is people who are high science may discount when people are not talking in data-driven terms. I think, I feel, based on my experience, doesn't get heard the same way as when people are talking in data-driven terms. Flip that around. Sometimes low science people may think that the data could be a lagging indicator. Sometimes there's judgment on the data. It's not as black and white as that. And so it's really understanding how to talk and listen in ways that will be heard by the audience you're talking to. So for example, that low science realtor could say, I've looked at the data. I know the trends are going up. However, based on my experience, I believe the market is softening. That might get the attention of that high science realtor differently, or vice versa. So let me pause. Does this framework kind of generally make sense enough to go through an exercise?
Rebecca, just a quick question. Is it more common for people to kind of zigzag across those scales or to be more on one side or the other?
Really good question. You know, Hogan would tell you your values are usually set in childhood. You make life decisions against it. They may iterate a little bit over time, but unless you have a major event that causes your worldview to change and therefore your values to change, they're kind of set. But for the most part, they are independent of each other with a couple of exceptions. And then there's some correlations across reports. So I'll give you an example. Power, which is about having responsibility, is correlated on the day-to-day report, which we're not going to talk about today, with ambition, high ambition. But it's not necessarily, sometimes you'll have power in commerce, you know, you want to have control of things and you want to use that control to drive the financials. but not always. Sometimes your high power wanting to control may be correlated with, you know, the lower hedonism, you know, kind of task focus, but not always. Often you'll see the three social dimensions, hedonism, altruistic affiliation. Somebody might be high on two or three or low on two or three. There can be a clustering there. But sometimes tradition, high tradition goes with high security and low tradition, low security. But people are people and it kind of varies. So there are, you know, some relationships, but not always. And it's rare that you'll have all highs or all lows. If you think back, the highs are the things that bring you energy that you'll put your own effort into trying to create. And oftentimes people will put their own effort into a set of things, but not everything. Or, and it's rare, it's not impossible, but it's unusual when somebody doesn't have anything that they would put their effort behind and it would be all lows. And so generally what you'll see is some level of a distribution across and the order of that changes by individual. Did that answer your question?
Yes.
Good. That's the goal. Who else has a good question? All right. So what I'm hoping to do, with Tanya's help, is to put you into breakout groups of five people. Tanya, can we do it for 8 minutes just in the interest of time?
We can. Let me.
Thank you for pivoting on the fly.
You bet.
Take a look again, when you read the case study that you were given, which of these scales are most relevant? And of the ones that are most relevant, do you think the environment's looking for somebody who's high or somebody who's low?
And I think we again want to iterate that the case study is in the, it was included in the invite. And then Tanya also posted a link in the chat box. The link comes up a little bit on the 90-degree vertical. So it's if you can figure out how to rotate it, you're good.
All right, let's send them off.
Hey, Tanya. Oh.
Yes, I haven't hit send yet.
Is there any way to show?
Love it. So Tanya, we have everybody back now, correct?
Everybody had to come back now. They didn't have a choice.
Okay, so welcome back. Thanks for coming back. In the interest of time, because I want to have one more discussion, let's focus the debrief on the excerpts from the job description on the left side of the page, so the part that's in black background with white letters. Did you see anything in those five bullets that tied to one of these Hogan scales?
Yes.
What did you see?
Well, we saw, which I can pull it up on the screen. I can't see it right now. But well, what we saw is you're going to be launching something completely new, right? And so that person is going to have to be able to be very comfortable leading. You're going to bring on and very comfortable trying something new, not held back by tradition. We also saw that you're going to build high stakes, right? High risk, high reward team. They're going to build a team around that. So that person's going to need to be able to find people that are motivated to that, like that, and has to be motivated herself that way. So they have to be, she's got to be, have high commerce association and strong affiliation, strong altruism to be able to work hard, play hard, and bring a team together. High power, meaning take responsibility, ownership, and accountability for what she's going to be doing. That had to be on there. And then we also like the low recognition tied with the high power, because while she'll take responsibility and get it done, she will share and promote the rest with the team. So we saw a nice fit with her profile and the excerpts from the black box.
Got it. Okay. So fantastic report out. I want to point out you did two steps of the process, which was one step ahead of where we are. So, job, okay. By the way. So what we wanted to start with, and I'm only making this point for one specific reason. What we wanted to start with was just taking a look at what the job required and how that ties to the Hogan scales. So for example, and I'm using the words of the case study, but you highlighted this, you have something here that says high visibility role. High visibility role translates to high recognition in Hogan terms, right? That first scale we talked about. So if we can all align on what is needed for this role, then we can separately, the step two, go out and look at candidate data and see how it compares, which you did an excellent job doing. The only reason I'm pointing out these two steps is to make sure you don't start with the candidate and then try to fit the candidate's profile in what, into what you think you need for the role.
That makes total sense. So we're outlining what it is we're hiring to, with the right?
Exactly, okay. And keep it objective.
Got it.
I love what you said. So let's, just a couple things. You highlighted the high affiliation, right? Need to create shared commitments and a feeling of unity. That can translate into high affiliation with Hogan. You also said that. I wanted to point it out, to the team as well. This role also talks about, you talked about higher affiliation. There's one other you said that I thought was really well done. Higher commerce. Stay current with trend. Where is it? They'll have high risk, high reward compensation structure, but you talked a little bit about that risk reward profile in general, maybe being lower security is how that would translate. So in the interest of time, I probably have another couple groups go, but I thought that debrief was so excellent. I'm going to run with it. So main point being, what's the role that you've designed in your org design? Mm-hmm. What are the most critical elements needed when you think about that role in, again, I'm using Hogan terms, but any assessment that you choose, how does that match? Mm-hmm. And the last step being, how does that person compare?
I like that you brought that out, because we had discussion about recognition, saying, would that hurt her? Meaning, would that be uncomfortable for her? Or on the, being lower in that score? She's not real low, but she's kind of in the middle. Versus would that play to the building a cooperative team,
Dang, building you're good. Team. Honestly, I think you have a future doing this. So what I would say is, if you think that the role needs this visibility, this person that's in a high profile role, that's not going to shy away from the spotlight. My sense is that Sam's a bit low here. 25 is a pretty low score. 35 and below shows that that's something they're going to be indifferent to. They may have a more modest profile. So if they, 65 and above is high, 34 and below is low. If they were like a 60, right? Or maybe even 65, we could have that argument. 25 is outside the range of how I would define that. So this goes back to my comment earlier. Is this a decision-making tool or is this an informed to the discussion? So right. To take your question comment a step further, what I would say is, when I compare my candidates, Sam matches up very well in a number mm-hmm. of these dimensions. There's a gap with recognition. Is this something we can live with relative to the other candidates? Maybe you have a candidate that hits all of them, right? And then that becomes, right. and has the right experiences, network, and other things as well, but hits all of them. So maybe Sam doesn't get the job because of that leaning, or maybe she is the best candidate for the role and you want to, during her first 30, 60, 90 days, year, make sure that you're coaching her to get out and in front of people, investing in public speaking skills or whatever it takes to help her kind of put the energy into showing up differently, even if it's not her natural tendency. To make her successful.
The other thing that swung for me too, if I may, I was looking at too the environment that she's in. It's science, right? It's all science and research, and that's the brand. So, just my own experience and biases, I've not seen high science, high research people take kindly to those who, in their mind, show off. So she might be a better fit for them because she hits all of the others and is modest too. So I don't know, it's something, a good discussion that would be had and relative to their clients.
And I would say exactly what you just said. It would lead to a good discussion in this space, right? Because now you've also had interview experience with her to know her style even more than we're talking about with the simple scale, and you know the details. My concern would be that this is someone who's not getting out there in front or communicating, even if it's with a style that works for, you know, in a data-driven scientific style. High recognition isn't always showy. It's kind of taking the initiative to be out and in front and communicating and visible. But I think what you said, again, I think you're fantastic. We should switch roles at some point. You can teach me to be an org design professional. Is, you know, it's leading to the right discussion about whether Sam brings the recognition needed for this role and whether that style will fit.
Yes, and without
that, I might just skip that part of the conversation altogether and get burned with it later.
Yeah, thank you, Rebecca, because I had thought that that was the issue, was recognition. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, great comment. When anybody else looks at this data compared to what the environment has said it's needed in a simple one-page summary, does anything else stick out at you as kind of aligned or a gap?
The one thing that I don't see the MVPI sharing with us is the ability to stay calm under pressure. Could you talk to that?
Yeah, so that's the first scale on the day-to-day leadership report. So remember I talked about Hogan has three different reports. This is the values and motives. When we get to day-to-day leadership, the first scale is something called adjustment. Folks who are high on adjustment tend to be calm, leader-like, confident. The downside sometimes is they're so confident, they don't ask for feedback or incorporate the ideas of others. They may be so confident that they're not noticing the stress that other people are feeling. Low adjustment are folks who personalize feedback. They iterate, they create very high quality work products, but they can be driven by this kind of level of internal churn or doubt or wanting to be good enough. And so that can play into, you know, the level of confidence or leader-likeness that they show up with. The second scale in the day-to-day leadership is ambition, kind of the pace someone set, the volume of work, if they're gonna give up with adversity or whether they're gonna create kind of a confrontation-free environment. People bring their whole self to work, they give discretionary effort, but they may not accomplish the same volume or pace as other teams. So you get into some of those discussions on the next report. And then the third report is how someone is likely to act badly under stress and pressure. So one of those scales is cautious. Somebody may become overly cautious. So let's just say that Sam is a bit of a risk taker, you know, in general has a value of keeping things changing and taking some risk and whatnot. But under stress and pressure, when things go badly, she can't take a risk. She can't make a decision. Things freeze up. That might be an issue with this role. And so those are how these three reports come together at the end of the day. Does that make sense?
Yeah, hey, so Rebecca, and you're just make sure I'm processing then. In this situation, kind of like it sounds like there's a, I think we remember, 24-month period, they're trying to, you know, either turn it around or sell it. That high pressure, stress and pressure report would be extremely influential, right?
100%. I would want to know where Sam's high adjustment set, and I'd like to see it on the higher side, meaning she's going to be generally calm day to day with these pressures. And I exactly what you just said. I'd like to know when under stress and pressure, when she gets to her, and you know, she's calm generally, but in those rare moments when she's not, what does it look like? And how do we manage against that? Because to your point, this environment has set up that that's going to be a factor. Yeah, you guys are good. So my intent today, again, was not to make you Hogan experts, but to demonstrate how assessment tools can be valuable to hopefully to org design professionals once you've got the structure built before you kind of lock in with it or as part of the talent selection step within it, to make sure that you're making the decisions tied to the structure and the reasons you put those roles in place, and you don't get caught up in people's favorites or, you know, putting the same team that you had and, you know, different roles in the future structure, but you're really making objective more objective decisions, informed decisions based on the future state structure that you've built? Because I've seen a lot of really great org design fall down when the wrong people get put in the place because a manager doesn't want to let go of people or make drastic change or you know, has their own interpretation and kind of what the original intent of the roles were. That's where assessments can be just a kind of objective piece of the discussion. Let me pause there. We have about 4 more minutes. I see Pamela, you know, kind of a good question. So Hogan is, you have to be certified to sell Hogan assessments. There is, I'm gonna see if I can quickly, before you guys drop off, look at Hogan's website in particular. You can go and there's a number, you know, they can send you in the direction of people. I certainly do this work. I'd be happy to talk to you. You know, I'm a licensed vendor for them and some other assessments. I saw up in the beginning of the chat, a couple other people here were also Hogan experts. And so as long as you get to somebody who's Hogan certified, you can get the assessments.
Yeah, thank you, Rebecca, because we work with, you know, smaller companies, medium-sized companies that don't always, you know, have this investment. So that's good to know.
Yeah, I'm putting Hogan and there you go. Their website and my website, if useful. Good. What other questions do we have? All right. So I will give you the gift of 3 minutes back in your life, but I will stay on as people drop off if there's any questions or comments people want to make, unless, you know, Tanya, Eddie, you have anything you want to close out with.
Just want to say thank you, Rebecca, for giving us the gift of your insight for 57 minutes in counting.
It's been awesome.
I've actually learned a lot more about assessments and appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, good.
All right. I think we got everybody. We can. All right. Have a great.